Hi, this is Matt Dixon with Purple Patch Fitness, and welcome to another Purple Patch podcast, a series of educational podcasts focusing on all aspects of performance.
The theme of recovery, I think, is important for everybody to hear and listen to, and as we go on a journey towards our performance, I think that it's an area that is potentially most misunderstood when athletes and coaches talk about recovery, and also often most ignored by many athletes and coaches. So what I want to do today is just go through a little bit about what is recovery and why it's important, why we treat about it as or consider it sort of one of our pillars of performance, as it were, the four pillars that sort of I think philosophically should be given equal emotional and philosophical value when we approach our training. I also want to go through the types of recovery that are in our training as well as in daily life, some of the things that we can do to help support our training and make sure that we consider training as a part of the training program. And then actually sort of filter through some of the consequences that occur commonly without proper recovery. I think it's important at this stage to immediately talk about the fact that you can never talk about any component of performance in a mutually exclusive manner. So as we talk about recovery, we may well come off of a tangent and talk a little bit about nutrition. We may talk about the training itself. So as we always think about training, whenever we isolate a component of performance, it's very, very difficult just to say, okay, great, understand that, got it right. Now let's move on and I should be successful. I think it's really important to frame everything, discuss things in an individual manner, but then also always come back to the overall picture of what you're looking to get out of the sport and where you're looking to go. So let's start with this. Let's talk a little bit about performance in general. And I've already spoken a lot. I won't focus today at all about methodology of training and what is an effective training program, apart from to say that it matters not how good your training program is, whether you're developing your own training program, whether you've got a fantastic coach developing a training program that is specific to your needs, as well as your current fitness level and ability level. It doesn't matter how good that training program is. If it is not supported with adequate recovery, smart and sensible recovery, as well as proper nutrition, in terms of the quality, the quantity, and timing, that training program won't deliver the goals and aims that it's written out to do. So we really need to focus on always stepping back and saying, okay, let's think about the training program. Now let's think about the supporting elements and what we need to do to ensure that those are performed correctly. The other thing I want to mention before we really delve into it is that recovery in itself is not simply taking off days, and we're really going to delve into the components of all of the recovery. But the one thing that recovery, when we go through all of the pieces of recovery, one thing that we will realize is that the recovery component is really one of the most important aspects to facilitate what I think is the absolute secret to success for any level of endurance athlete. And that is, if you're an endurance athlete aiming for a stated goal, the secret that comes with success is consistency of an effective program. And that means consistency over not just a week or two, but many, many weeks, months, and even years to finally develop into the athlete that you can be. It doesn't matter whether you're just looking to finish a half Ironman or an Ironman or be world champion. The key to success is consistency. And if we don't achieve a balanced, effective training program that enables you to stay healthy, injury-free, and consistently do training that is specific to your needs, you won't be successful. So with that frame of mind, let's delve in and let's talk a little bit about recovery in general. So let's think about the goals of recovery. Recovery is a word that is thrown around, and I think that many people discuss recovery and talk about recovery, and few people really do it or understand actually what the needs of a proper recovery are. And before we sort of dissect each component of recovery as we go, let's actually talk about the goals of recovery. When you are training, you are suppressing your system. And when you suppress your system through training, there are several things that occur. You're suppressing your immune system. You're offsetting your hormonal balance. You're depleting calories, hydration, and electrolyte balance, all of which need to be replenished if we're going to maintain a healthy place. You're also doing a lot of muscle damage and tissue damage. So training is a hard thing. When we think about recovery, the real goals is to replenish and support all of those. So we need to make sure that we integrate enough recovery into it so that we can allow the immune system to recover, allow ourselves to get back into what we call balanced metabolic health, and allow our hormonal balance to remain. If you just train and train and train without proper recovery, you're never going to get a restoration of proper hormonal balance. And one of the reasons that endurance athletes get sick so very frequently is they push their immune system down to where it's broken. They find themselves more susceptible to illnesses and common colds and things like that. And in extreme cases, I should note that when you get very, very frequent colds or you have the inability to get rid of sicknesses, that really is a cause for concern. And the first thing to look at there is actually your training program in itself. It's very, very important to look at. So the first goal is to restore immune system and to restore your hormonal balance. Secondly, you really want to use integrated recovery to ensure that you can replenish some of the caloric deficit that you've created, especially if you are training very, very hard. More of an elite level athlete or an athlete such as an Ironman athlete that tends to do more hours of training each week, it becomes very, very difficult to get a high quality caloric intake that doesn't create a deficit. So much of the calories that you take in revolve around fueling and heavy training days that really quality calories, as we call them, highly nutritious calories, fruits, vegetables, proteins, good oils, are harder to come by. And having integrated recovery provides a marvelous opportunity to replenish those calories. The common mistake that I see many, many athletes do is on their very easy days of training, they try and cut down on the caloric intake. And what they should actually be doing is maintaining caloric intake, but making sure that they really shift towards highly nutritious and quality calories. Lots of lean meats and proteins, lots of fruits, lots of vegetables. In conjunction with the caloric intake that you're looking at, we also want to use recovery as an opportunity to replenish those depleted electrolytes and probably diminished hydration status. So on those lighter sessions or lighter days of activity, we really try and have a focus on optimal hydration, lots and lots of fluids, lots and lots of water, as well as, of course, we're getting a lot of the electrolytes replenished throughout daily highly nutritious quality calories that we're taking in. Food does have electrolytes. Most of you will realize that. But we also might want to take in some other electrolytes with our fluids as well, just to ensure that we can replenish those electrolytes and get back up to a nicer balanced state. The third goal of recovery is to allow repairing of our muscle damage. Endurance sports typically do some micro damage to the tissue. And in order for us to restore that damage or repair that damage and hence make the adaptations necessary, you must allow the body to recover. If you continue to train and train and train and never allow it to recover, the muscle tissue cannot repair and cannot restore itself to actually get stronger. It takes time to repair, and it's critical that those recovery sessions, sleep and rest, are integrated so that we can actually facilitate this to occur. I think one final area that I think is worthy of note is the emotional component of recovery. There's a great old quote that we often use called that goes, fatigue makes cowards of us all. And I'm sure that you have felt when you've been in in blocks of very heavy training, of which maybe some fatigue is expected. But when you get so suppressed, when your body gets so suppressed, not only are you suppressed so far as an immune system, general fatigue, and suppressed hormonal factors, you actually, it becomes a sort of an outlet of that is it becomes very, very hard to stay emotionally motivated. And allowing yourself a little bit of integrated recovery during the training, during the blocks of training, enable you to maintain emotional balance, maintain enjoyment of the sport, and most importantly, maintain motivation. And if you don't have motivation, it's very, very hard to make the really valuable quality sessions of training really effective. So I think that those are the four major areas of recovery, and all of that is underlined by the most critical recognition of recovery, is that ultimately the physiological adaptations that occur from your heavy training that you do, the really hard work that you do, all of those adaptations occur during recovery. And we're going to delve into, well, what is recovery now? So when do those adaptations occur, and how do we think about those as a part of the training plan? So let's sort of evolve this a little bit, and let's talk about recovery and what it actually is. There are several areas of recovery. I think that we can break recovery down into three key areas or components. There is your global recovery, when you just think about it from a pure physiological state, and recovery in daily life. There's also the components that you can do so far as sports-specific recovery. Recovery that it takes of how you're actually building your training program and what are you doing in training that will help facilitate recovery. And then the final component that's worthy of a little bit of discussion is the actual recovery techniques and tools that you might encompass in your training or might include in your training to help maximize your recovery from each of the training sessions and go from there. So we'll sort of go through each of those in turn and have a little thought on each of them, and then we'll sort of discuss it as a greater component of training. Let's talk about global recovery first. Really, the most important component for any athlete is the global recovery. Quite simply, the most important recovery that you have in your training plan, in your life, is a very simple thing: sleep. Sleep is the most restorative time of your day and the most critical part where all of the physiological adaptations that we're seeking in our training actually occur. And for really effective recovery through sleep, we need both the appropriate quantity of sleep as well as the appropriate quality of sleep. So above all else, sleep is the major focus for maximizing recovery in endurance athletics. Not to delve in too much into sleep patterns and quality of sleep, but I think that the general rule of thumb is you really need to be aiming for at least a minimum of 6 hours to 7 hours sleep a night. To get two cycles of REM, it's much more important to try and aim for 8 or more hours a night. Of course, that's not always possible. But the one thing is worthy of brief mention here is if we really value sleep as recovery, and if we really value recovery as a component of your training program, what that means is you can't continuously or chronically minimize sleep in pursuit of training. So while you might have to sometimes get up a little earlier than you'd like to, or what feels good, to get in a quality training session, or to get in one of your training sessions, simply sleeping 3, 4, or 5 hours a night so that you can cram everything in, it's not a sustainable practice. And you have to make sure that if you do suffer from lower numbers of sleep hours available, you have to try and optimize at least 2 or 3 times a night that you say, okay, I am going to sleep an extra hour or two and really try and maximize the restorative phase of life. Because if you always consistently minimize sleep, you simply can't get the returns on your training over the long term, and long term negative effects will occur. So in global recovery, the number one thing that we need to talk about as it occurs, as we talk about recovery, is sleep, period. Another area of global recovery that I think is really important and often missed out on, especially in the value, is naps. And you might be laughing right now and thinking, well, that would be lovely, but I have to go to work from 8 till 6 every day. When am I going to get a nap? But even some forward-thinking companies are understanding the value of naps in the day. The critical thing is getting it right. You don't actually have to fall asleep during a nap to get the restorative benefits from that little session. Really, it is 10 to 25 minutes, a time to really relax, settle down, and allow your body to fall into a very light sleep is incredibly beneficial hormonally. And you can do that either right after lunch or sometime during the middle of the afternoon if you can find a quiet place and settle down. In fact, if companies were smart, they would be encouraging their employees to take 10 to 15 minute naps 1 to 2 times a week, because it's shown again and again in research that productivity as a result of people that integrate very short naps into the day is radically increased. So my athletes, my professional athletes are all very much encouraged to take 1 or 2 very short naps during the day. If you do have the opportunity to do that, it's highly valuable. What you want to avoid is the tendency to go and fall asleep, even if you do have lots of time in the day, to fall asleep for 45, 60, 90 minutes, because ultimately taking an hour and a half nap, while might feel quite nice at the time, is likely to disrupt the quality of your most productive sleep, the sleep during the night. So it's much, much better to have 10 to 15, maybe up to 20 to 25 minutes of nap. The general rule of thumb that is valuable here is once you've had your nap, when you wake up, you shouldn't get that groggy feeling. So if you get a very, very groggy feeling, it's likely that the nap is a little too long for you. Let's transition and let's talk a little bit about sport-specific recovery. I think that there's a common misunderstanding of recovery or recovery sessions as it applies to endurance athletes is that you have to have a day off every single week. Recovery means doing nothing. And in fact, it's quite the reverse. Complete rest days are, for some people, really important. And it's more for the emotional standpoint that a complete rest day is a quality thing, a good thing to do. It's a good opportunity to completely step away from the sport and take a step back and avoid doing this. One of the negative things of a complete rest day is that it often makes you feel flat in training the next day. So while they are highly restorative, that you really want to try and avoid complete rest days just before a prior key session on the day following. I don't, unless an athlete needs it for scheduling or for the emotional component, I seldom put complete rest days into training. Sometimes I'll ask for it, but I think that to avoid that flat feeling and to enable the body to still gain the benefits of recovery while while also being able to move some blood around the body and actually enable the process, are very light sessions, very, very easy sessions. And the rule of thumb on these easy sessions is to ensure that it's not very hard. It always remains conversational. It's short, so radically shorter sessions. There's a great rule of thumb of around 40 minutes per session. And the goal of it is to move blood around. It's not to improve fitness. It's not to get stronger. It's not to get more powerful. All it is to move blood around, almost in a lay term, flushing blood around the body to really move some of the components of fatigue out of the system. And so we really encourage light activity, very smooth activity, swimming, spinning on the bike, and even very for higher level athletes, light easy runs. The mistake would be in these sessions, which is actually more common than we would hope, is to take a light recovery focused session and turn it into a high quality or higher intensity session, or go longer. And that usually comes from a lack of confidence in the training program, or a lack of confidence in for the athlete. And so I think it's really important to label your workouts and understand this is a lighter session. The goal of this is not fitness. It's to actually facilitate recovery. I'm going to keep it very, very light and enable my body to actually rejuvenate so that I can come back tomorrow and be strong and be great. And that is the key component of sport-specific light activity recovery workouts. The one thing you can do in those workouts is some neuromuscular firing work, some very, very high intensity but very short speed sessions. In the swimming pool, that might be 25s, very, very fast with lots of rest. If you're running, it might be 15-second to 20-second strides where you're building to a very fast effort. In cycling, it might be high-intensity little sprints with a minute or two's recovery between. But something that actually really fires the neuromuscular system and really helps athletes prevent feeling flat or tired in the next days. While they might feel a little stressful so far as on your breathing, it will get the heart rate up. On your overall immune system and hormonal health, it won't suppress whatsoever. And so there's nothing wrong with doing some neuromuscular firing type work as well. Taking a slightly wider lens, we should also think about little blocks of recovery that we integrate into the overall training program. You can't just lay a week on week on week on week of hard activity without giving ourselves an extended little block of training in which we thread together a few days of lighter activity within the program. If you're smart, let me take a step back. The traditional approach to integrating recovery blocks in training is about every fourth week. So in the classic periodization of training, you would progressively build 3 weeks in a row of training, at which point you're in all likelihood emotionally and physically very, very tired and desperate for a rest. With when you have that of complete fatigue after 3 weeks of training, you're now desperate for a complete week of recovery, and it's just simply not the best approach to building a recovery block in. We like much more to think about trying to get in front of the fatigue a little bit. And with most of the research and my experience showing that about every 10 to 14 days, the athlete typically needs 3 or 4 days of consistent lighter days of activity in a row. So if you build it on a typical 2 week plan, a great rule of thumb might be, yes, you can sort of integrate a couple of weeks of pretty solid work where most of the weeks are stressful days. But then follow that 10 days to 2 weeks with anywhere between 2 and maybe up to 5 days of much, much lighter activity, where you have multiple sessions in a row that are not facilitated to increase fitness, but actually designed to really restore everything that we talked about so far as the goals of recovery in the first place. That's a really very, very personal thing as it comes by athlete. I don't think that there is a recipe that works for every single athlete. I have more resilient athletes where they might go 14 days of training where most of those days are pretty hard days. And after 1 or 2 days, they'll bounce back straight away and they'll show all the signs of being completely rejuvenated. And if that's the case, if you're really resilient like that, and then you don't need to go and rest 5 days, you can bounce back to it on the third day. On the other hand, you might be an athlete that is less resilient. And that doesn't mean you're less of an athlete. It just means you need to embrace recovery and those recovery blocks with a little more vigor. And what I mean by that is you might go 10 days to 14 days of pretty high quality training, but then decide to build in 4 or 5 days of recovery before you start the next cycle of training. And that's really an individual case-by-case basis as we go through each of the sessions. So that's sort of sport-specific recovery, coming down from the daily single session all the way up to integrating recovery over the course of multiple blocks of training. I think if we look at the very bird's eye view of a training program, it's worth recognizing that at least once, but more commonly twice a year, we really need to allow ourselves to take a step back from the sport in general. 2 to 3 weeks, at least 10 days to 3 weeks of really complete recovery, where we do allow ourselves to rejuvenate. And while we can remain active, not have too much structured training. And I think that's really, really important for many athletes. And I think rushing back from that, I've never seen an athlete that has rushed back or rushed on from the end of one season to the next season and decided to not take an extended break, a 2 week to 3 week break from structured training, and had massive success following that. They might have massive immediate success, but in the long term, their next season at some point tends to suffer. The final thing I'll talk about in sport-specific recovery is actually related to triathletes specifically. And that's that I think that of the three sports in triathlon, swimming, biking, and running, running is the one that places the biggest load or stress on your musculoskeletal system. It's weight-bearing, and there is an awful lot of muscular damage that occurs with running. And that's why during the preseason, during a certain phase as you're progressing your training through, and even the early phases of the endurance build, typically January, February time of the season, I tend to have athletes have a little lighter focus on running and then shift to a heavier emphasis on swimming. Unless there is a specific reason to build, to really work on the weakness of running, typically, I find that athletes respond best if they have a little bit less of a focus for 6 to 8 weeks on running, where, yes, we're still working on running, we're still integrating running, but it has a smaller percentage of the overall training week, and shift the emphasis to a little bit more on swimming. That is the time of the season that we can really build the fitness that we'll live on in swimming for the rest of the season, and allowing ourselves a little bit of muscular skeletal love to enable our muscles to repair is globally a really pretty good thing for us typically. Let's finally talk a little bit about the recovery techniques and tools. What are some of the things that you might include in your training to help facilitate recovery? I always see these as more supplementary to the training program. The components that we've already talked about, sleeping and napping in daily life, and then integrate recovery in the actual training program, those are the meat and potatoes of your recovery, critically important. These recovery techniques and tools are things that you can just help facilitate and maybe add a little bit of daily recovery to help you recover from specific acute sessions or training sessions that you've completed any given day. The first is compression. Compression has certainly been shown. I actually like compression and I think it's been pretty widely accepted now that compression clothing, compression garments have a positive influence on recovery. The tights, the guards, the calf guards, things like that. The number one use of those types of compression garments would certainly be during travel, air travel or car travel. I think it's worth in those situations wearing compression, but it's also worth wearing them following tough workouts. There are other recovery tools that take compression up to the next level, things like Normatec, the Game Ready system, other recovery boots, things like that, which are obviously a financial investment, but I think that it's pretty much widely accepted that those are beneficial. I'm not so sure about compression during activity and during racing, but certainly there is real no negative that I can think of to wearing it during racing and training. So if you feel like it helps, and then go ahead and wear compression during activity, during training. Some people swear by it. And you know what? If it works for you, and then go ahead and use it. There's certainly no negative, would be my opinion on that. Let's talk a little bit about hot and cold. For nearly every endurance athlete, I would much prefer them to use heat over ice for recovery. There's some. I'm not a fan of ice for recovery. There is research potentially to show that the ice might facilitate some recovery, and certainly acute injuries is a little bit different. I would encourage athletes to use ice or ice therapy, cold treatments on acute injuries. But when it comes to daily life and daily recovery, I think that the research is inconclusive on it. And I'm not a fan of the resulting tightness of the ligaments and really everything wrapping around the joints that occurs because of it. And for the most part, I much prefer heat treatment, warm baths, saunas, steam rooms, things like that, I think are much more valuable for facilitating recovery and enabling the body to relax, enabling the muscles to relax. And so if you have an option of heat versus ice, I would always go with heat. I think the last thing that is worthy of mention is a whole subject within itself, but I think that it's so central to your recovery on from a single session, as well as the value of maintaining consistency, that I can't talk about recovery without discussing it, and that is nutrition and fueling. Now, you may well have heard me talk about nutrition and fueling before, but the part that we have to focus on is the fueling. And those are the calories that you take in during and immediately following exercise. If you want to maximize or optimize your recovery in your training program, you have to ensure that your fueling is done correctly every single time you work out. And the calories that you take in during and immediately following activity are not calories that you should be looking at as trying to gain highly nutritious fuels, foods. The calories that you take in during your fueling window, as we call it, during and immediately following activity, the purpose of those are to fuel your muscles and to replenish the fuel that you have burned through during exercise. Purely that, fueling the system. And it's absolutely important because of a whole host of physiological reasons that we go through during the nutrition and fueling seminar, but it's absolutely critical that we get this right every time. If you truly want to recover, fueling becomes central, almost as central as sleep in your recovery process. It's so important that if you do not fuel properly, you cannot optimize the gains that you can make or the adaptations that you can make from your hard work. And so there is no quicker way to strip away the benefits of all of the sacrifice and all of the hard work that you do in training if you ignore fueling as a component of it. And I think that that's a pretty smart way to finish this recovery discussion, is to tie it back into the fueling that's absolutely necessary and the goal of integrating all of these recovery techniques to ensure that you can maintain what is the secret to performance, which is consistent, effective training. If you want to be consistent over not only a week, but many, many weeks of training so that you can layer on fitness adaptations like the layers of an onion and slowly progress over time, you have to make sure that you take recovery important and you take nutrition important. So I hope that's useful to you. We will be going through that again, and we'll be writing about this more in future times. But that's a quick introduction to recovery and should work well.
And this has been Matt Dixon closing out another Purple Patch podcast. Thanks so much for listening. See you next time. And any follow-up questions you might have, feel free to email us at plansupport@purplepatchfitness.com. Take care.